Hey, if you've suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Get back to the audition with Del Olale and the guy who's still auditioning, Josh Beard.
Will he get the part? Only Del knows the answer.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del and auditioner Josh Beard.
And my thing is, where does it stop, right? So you start taking pieces and, we'll see how this goes. But you don't want to take too many pieces away or you'll be playing flag football.
That was Andy Reid, two-time Super Bowl champion Andy Reid, discussing a new rule that's going to be implemented where on kickoffs, if it's one of those pop-ups which some coaches implement to try to cause carnage or cause the kickoff returner to be unsure about what he wants to do, you know, pop it up in the air, ball lands about the five-yard line, and you have 10 screaming dudes coming at you. Let's see what happens. You can now call for a fair catch. Once you make the catch, the ball will be placed at the 25-yard line, and the quarterback runs out on the field, and we get going for play. Apparently, the Chiefs, whether it be the Kelce brothers, because they have their own podcast, and they talk about this as well, we'll get to it, or Andy Reid, don't know that this is already a rule in the sport, mm-hmm. in college football. College football does this already, a player safety thing where you don't want a guy looking up in the sky waiting for a pop-up and having a guy clean him out. It's to prevent concussions, which apparently in the NFL, the kickoff is the most dangerous place for those to occur. Concussions are at a higher level than in other play situations because of, guys are running down from the 30-yard line at full speed trying to make a play. So they're trying to remove that aspect of it to keep the returner safe, and it's also for the blockers and the guys mm-hmm. trying to make tackles. It's all put together to say, hey, that's not a safe play for us right now. We're trying to avoid it. And you heard Andy Reid talking about flag football. I just think it's weird because I know they're Sunday guys and maybe they don't watch a lot of college football, but it hasn't dramatically changed the way anyone enjoys college football.
No, it hasn't. And it's not going to dramatically change the way people enjoy or compete at the NFL level either. The other sound that we heard from Andy Reid was he said, oh, where does it stop? When does it become flag football? That's such an extreme response to this where it's like, well, look, we're not removing certain tackles from the game. We're just removing a really, really high impact, high percentage injury chance situation from the game. It's working out at the college level. We're going to try to fix that at the pro level. To be honest, I don't even really care about the kickoff in the first place. I'd be totally fine if they just put a team on a 25-yard line and we didn't even have kickoffs in general. Every once in a while when you get that kick return for a touchdown, is it exciting? Yes. Is it electric? Yes. Cool. Fine. Awesome. I don't care. I'd rather watch a quarterback throw the ball 70 yards to Justin Jefferson and watch him juke a bunch of guys and score a touchdown. I don't care about kickoffs in general. And so this response by Andy Reid and some of these other players, some of these other coaches, it's just ridiculous to me for them to be mad at such a minimal change that can help people not have horrible, horrible injuries.
And since they moved the kickoff to the 35, if it's not a touchback, the kicker screwed up.
Your kicker just sucks then.
Like he miskicked it because the ball being placed at 35 changed how kickoffs are. There are very few chances to return a kick. We see guys who are really good at it start their run-up as far as the kick returner, like at the eight yards deep in the end zone to come mm-hmm. up and try to catch it at full speed because those are where the balls land. So I'm trying to think of how many kickoffs we won't see because of this rule or kickoff returns because of this rule. Most of the time, those guys are blasting the ball through the end zone anyway.
Yeah.
There are some coaches, special teams coaches, they see an advantage of doing the pop-up thing, but they rarely do it. It's not a thing that happens 2 to 3 times a game. So I don't know what the actual complaint is. There's another guy complaining, and I mentioned them before we started this conversation. The Kelce brothers are talking about it as well. And, they sound just like meatheads. I'm sure they're very eloquent in other regards, but this one in particular, it's like, okay, this is why when some people say, I don't care when athletes say stuff, and by some people I say me,
yeah,
I'm talking about me, this is what it is, because it is, I don't feel like they really thought about it that much other than,
I like watching kickoffs. I don't like this because I like that.
Yes, pretty much. These are the Kelce brothers from their podcast.
I think this is absolutely stupid. I don't think this is making the game safer. I think it's making it more boring and taking a lot of excitement out of the game's opening play. This is whack.
We're just getting closer and closer to getting rid of special teams. I mean, it's like the only thing left now is punt. When is somebody not going to fair catch it and take the ball to 25? Unless it's just a really bad kick, right?
And it's taken away from the excitement of a kickoff, man. I love watching kickoffs.
I just don't know what are we doing it for then. We're just going to have guys, hey, I'm going to run 80 yards for no reason, and then we're going to start and drive.
So dumb. Like, what?
We're just going to do everything for show, and here's the ceremonial kickoff that's not going to get returned ever.
That's what I'm saying, man. It just deflates the excitement of, like, the first kickoff. Like, everybody used to, like, oh, boom! And everybody runs when the ball, and it says boom when it gets kicked off, and it's exciting, and then you see that first live contact. You hear it. Everybody's just running full speed at each other. And you're like, football! This is electric! And you're just going to turn it into 25-yard line. Let's get the quarterback out here. It just takes away from everything. It just immediately deflates you.
Yeah,
I just got deflated thinking about it.
Everything. It takes away from everything.
Look, I know those guys are busy. Do they watch the kickoffs? Because what they're describing happened 15 years ago.
Yeah.
The excitement, the opening kickoff, it's usually, in their case, Harrison Butker booted it 8 yards through the end zone. The Chiefs have the ball in the 20.
Yeah.
What are they talking about?
It's what they're talking about happens maybe 1% of the
time. Excuse me, that's 25. That's where touchbacks are.
1% of the time. They're talking about maybe 1% of the time. I'd be interested. I might dive into the numbers on this and really look at how often this rule change is going to matter. Because like you said, it's very rare that a special teams coach asks for one of those high kicks that's going to go to the 5-yard line. And then the amount of times that gets turned into a kick return for a touchdown. One of the things that Jason Kelce said, I think he's definitely the smarter of the two, because at least there was some semblance of analysis in there, and he's trying to turn it into a joke and have fun with it. Travis Kelce he is every Chad I've ever met put together in one mega Chad, and there's zero. And anytime anybody starts it with, I just don't like it, I immediately am probably not going to listen to the rest of what they have to say, because there's no analysis there whatsoever. But Jason Kelce said something that I'm totally on board with. Get rid of special teams. I don't care about kickoffs. You're right. I don't need a ceremonial kickoff at the beginning of the game. Do the coin toss, go to the 25-yard line, and start playing the game. I'm okay with punts, but to be honest, the way analytics are going, the way numbers are going, and the way the game is starting to shape out, punting is going to become less and less. It's still going to be a factor. It's still going to be there, but it's going to happen less and less, because teams are going to start to go for it more, because they understand that their win percentage is going to jump up in certain situations. If they go for it on 4th and 2 on the 30-yard line, it makes more sense for them to do that. So I'm totally fine with a world where special teams becomes less and less of a factor, because it's by and large, the weakest and at least exciting part of the game.
The numbers, as far as what they're railing against, we're only talking about those times where a kicker is purposely trying to keep the ball in the field of play to create a situation where a returner has guys bearing down on him within like 5 yards of him catching it. But most of the time, the ball's in the end zone and the returner makes a decision where he's going to bring it out or not. These are going to be rare. It was rare that a guy had to look up in the sky and fear for his life and then catch it and then, you know, get tackled at the 15. Those are rare occurrences. So we're still going to have kickoffs, because returners, most of those are specialists. They don't make the team unless their guys are going to return kicks. So they're always going to still want to return kicks. It's not removing the kickoff. What it's doing is saying, those coaches who like to play the game and try to find every advantage they have, we're taking that away from them. But for the kickers who still are going to boot the ball into the end zone, the kickoffs will still remain. The kickoff returns will still remain. It's a overreaction by the Kelces and Andy Reid as well. And I like both Kelces talking about it. Jason Kelsey's never been on a kickoff team, probably since high school. And when's the last time Travis Kelsey was a part of a kickoff team?
Yeah.
You're sitting there.
High school, maybe.
Yeah, so stop it. It doesn't affect you at all other than, I guess, you being a fan of that particular play. I don't think it'll affect much at all other than like two or three times, maybe for a kicker per season. Because most of those guys don't even try that play because they'll screw it up. They'd rather just kick the ball into the end zone and see what happens. So that'll be a new rule that's in place, and I doubt you'll even notice it.
No, nobody's – no. Once football play actually starts, we're never going to hear about it ever again.
No, it won't matter.
No.
It won't. And it will probably remain – I think they're doing it on a trial period to see how it works out. I think it'll be fine. It'll remain because all your favorite kickers will be trying to kick the ball through the back of the end zone anyway. So the Kelseys are upset.
And everything's stupid. This is stupid. This is dumb. I hate it.
Yeah, great tight end, great center. What a crazy family when it comes to talent level, but
not really your thinking man.
Hey man, that podcast is pretty successful, but that particular instance, I'm not sure they thought that out or thought it out very well. Other than hey, we like kickoffs, but hey, that's their prerogative. I'm just laughing. Sorry. That'll wrap up this segment. We'll be back on the other side. There's still more basketball to talk. We have and not really the game because the game wasn't that entertaining. But a lot of guys saying a lot of things. Kwame Brown and Shannon Sharpe, of all people, having a back and forth over Shannon Sharpe inserting himself in a couple of basketball controversies. So we'll discuss that. There's plenty more to get to. The audition, Dell, Josh, RJ, we'll be back.
Well, hello.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
We got purple and gold jerseys. I got one right here, right now. It's white. We got purple and gold, though. Nobody got number 6. You can have that. You done played in the league for 35 years. You done broke every record. You the GOAT. You can be the GM over here, the coach. You can be the trainer. You can be the cook. The driver.
Welcome back to The Audition with Del Olale, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now here's Del and today's teacher's pet, Josh Beard.
That was Dwight Howard, a completely unserious individual, as he always has been, inviting LeBron James to Taiwan to hang out and be the GM. Dwight, LeBron wouldn't hang out with you if you're on the corner of his neighborhood. He doesn't want to meet you anywhere.
Wasn't LeBron on the banana boat?
Yeah, it was him.
Was Dwight on the banana boat?
No, Dwight doesn't have those type of friends.
No.
There's a certain hierarchy of friendom in the NBA, and Dwight doesn't reach the level.
He's not banana boat level.
No, he's not. If
LeBron didn't invite you to the banana boat, I severely doubt he's going to come meet you in Taiwan.
And that was back when Dwight still had a career. Was the banana boat? What year was that? Because was Dwight a Rocket at that point?
I think he was was he a Rocket or a Laker at that point?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, when the banana boat picture was taken, because I think Dwight was still an effective player in the NBA, but he wasn't on the level where he could hang out with Chris Paul, Carmelo, LeBron, and D-Wade.
Such a goofy picture. I'm trying to see. I don't see a year on that.
Yeah, it just more
shows
recent stories
the four guys.
Yeah, I don't know when the banana boat picture was taken, but
I still think that if Dwight Howard would have been willing to accept what he would have been best at in the NBA, he would have had a much longer, more effective career. If he would have been totally fine being a defensive pick and roll guy, if he would have just been okay with I'm not a back to the basket. Do like footwork, do all these post moves type of player. I'm not the guy. I'm not Joel Embiid. I'm not Hakeem Olajuwon. I'm not Yao Ming. If he would have just been okay with a guy that was just crazy athletic, set the pick, roll to the basket, nobody can stop me, and then play amazing defense, I think he would have had a much longer stint in the NBA at a high level.
You know, I don't think he was wrong to try to be a back-to-the-basket guy
In the beginning,
in
no.
In the beginning,
yeah.
But then when it became clear that he wasn't most effective, he was the duck in guy, like, and the lob threat, and if
yeah,
but not throw the ball into the post him and put on a series of moves that's going to get you a bucket. He wasn't that type. If you wanted to off ball screen for him so he can, like I say, he can get that duck in, and while the defender's recovering, he can make a play, turn over his left or right shoulder, yep, and then make a play. But as far as I'm going to back you down, there was a guy in Houston that back you down. I forgot it was a radio guy who's not long before I got here, but his time was coming. Someone who knows Houston radio probably has heard this guy. But if he could back you down, that would have been something that would have added to his repertoire, but he could never be a guy who could make more than one move and become an effective post threat. So it just wasn't his deal. So but he didn't realize that, and then eventually he became a bit of an enforcer type. And talk about Dwight became a bit of a cheap shot artist later in his career. And it was a bit of a fall for a guy who was an elite athlete, shot blocker, patrolled the paint and helped the Magic get to a finals and beat LeBron in a conference finals.
Yep.
And I remember doing a show here on the weekend, and Orlando won the first game of the series, and LeBron hit this last second three to give Cleveland a 1-1, tie the series at 1-1. I forgot who he hugged. He ran down the court and hugged someone, and the Magic still went on to win that series, eventually losing to Kobe Bryant's Lakers in the finals. So that was the peak of Dwight's tenure there. I think Stan Van Gundy was the coach. Shamir Nelson might have been the point guard. So it's a long time ago when the Magic were actually relevant. It's been a while. But, yeah, I kind of agree that Dwight, if he would have accepted who he actually was, I think he would have been a guy who could have thrived, maybe not so much after his Laker tenure, but in that tenure where the Lakers were bringing all these not washed-up guys but past their prime guys, he could have been effective, but he always wanted to be something that he wasn't. His time here in Houston wasn't bad. I mean,
it could have been better, though, if he had accepted that. Imagine if he accepts that role here in Houston with Harden. I think
you mean a souped-up Clint Capella?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like, it's crazy to think about whenever, because Hita Turkoglu was still playing on that Orlando team,
I think,
too.
So, yes.
And it was, I remember that playoffs thinking to myself, man, Dwight Howard looks like he could be this new generation's version of Shaq. Literally nobody can stop him. He's bigger than everybody else. He's so athletic. If he just puts himself in the right position and plays the game the right way. But he wanted to be this, he didn't want to be this big, bruising, strong guy. He wanted to be this, like, finesse, high post, mid post player. And it honestly shortened his career because he was never willing to take on that. He didn't want to be the blunt weapon. He wanted to be the sharp edge, and he just didn't have it in him to be that sharp edge. So, but yeah, have fun playing your basketball in Taiwan, okay, Dwight? LeBron's not coming to play basketball or do anything bad. He's not even going to come and watch a TV show with you in Taiwan.
Found the Banana Boat Team Wikipedia page because one does
exist.
It has
a Wikipedia page?
Yes,
cool.
It was in 2015 that picture was taken. So Wade, Chris Paul, LeBron James, and Carmelo Anthony were all there.
How many more Banana Boats do you think they've been on since then?
I don't know if you replicate that picture. And Joel Blank chimes in. Gene Peterson was the name. There it is. Thank you, Joel. Joel knows a lot about Rockets lore. Yeah. And longtime radio play-by-play guy, Gene Peterson. I never heard that call live, but I heard replays of it, and that's why it stuck in my head, but I could not remember the name, so thank you for that, Joel. Yeah, the Banana Boat was 2015, and I don't think they've ever done it again. I don't think they expected the initial picture to go as far as it did.
So goofy. Yeah. It's so goofy. Okay, important question. I think this might be the most important question we've asked on this show within the last 2 days.
Seems unlikely, but go ahead.
It's very likely. Would you invite me to the Banana Boat?
No.
What?
Why? What kind of question is that? Why would I ever invite? First off, the whole thought of sitting on a banana boat with three other guys is weird.
Okay.
Is weird. Mostly
that's hurtful.
No, it's not, because I wouldn't invite anyone. You are just one of many.
You wouldn't even invite RJ. You'd just be sitting on a banana boat by
yourself? I wouldn't be sitting on a banana boat. It's a weird concept anyway.
But let's say, Dell, you're chilling out. You're hanging out on the lake. You're sitting on a banana boat.
And grab a banana boat?
Yeah, you're like, I got this banana boat for the weekend. I need three guys to come hang out with me. Would RJ and I be on that list of the three guys?
There's so many things that would never occur in reality. I would never have a banana boat. I would never think I need three guys to hang out with me. And I certainly, my first thought wouldn't call RJ or you and go, hey,
wow.
Let me kind of separate myself from you in this situation. Just talk to RJ.
Why am I getting separated?
Because you clearly want to be called to be on a banana boat.
I want to be on a banana boat.
Let me talk to someone reasonable. RJ.
Sir.
Even exclude me from the situation because we don't know each other that well. We've worked together now for a week in the past. But still, that doesn't lead me to believe that you expect a call from me about, hey, you want to hang out on a banana boat. So think about the person you've had the most fun with as far as one of your friends.
Okay.
If that friend called you and said, hey, I've got a banana boat and I'm bringing two other guys with me. You want to sit on one?
Yeah.
What's your reaction?
Pass.
Thank you. It's pretty simple. What? I think it's an automatic pass
an
for everyone.
Yes.
No.
Be like,
no,
do you want
not.
Me to bring White Claws?
There's.
That's the only question. It's you know, it's not even a yes or no. It's an absolutely this is happening. We both know that. What do you want me to bring?
There is no one I know who I would call or would expect a call from me saying, hey, you want to hang out on a banana boat and not be a response like, what the hell is wrong with
you? Okay, you're not invited on my banana boat.
Good.
RJ, you can come. RJ's officially invited
to my banana
boat. Are
you saying yes to that invitation?
I will go to like the place in which we're going. I will drink some non-alcoholic beverages and watch you and your friends fall off a banana boat. I won't be joining you on the boat.
It's going to be me, you, Joe, and Paul on the banana boat. Dell's not invited.
So you just got like three oversized guys and then one skinny guy, and I don't know where Paul's sitting.
At the very end,
no!
So we can knock him off in the very back. So whenever the banana boat gets going, we can just throw him off the banana
boat. I think the banana boat is sinking with me, you, and Joe being as big as we are.
It'll be fine.
But I'm not doing it. No, I'm just I'll drink. All be right. Like, hey, look at those guys that I'm supposed to be
going
here
on
with
the,
on vacation.
I'm going on the banana boat by myself now because
that was always the scenario. You on a banana boat by yourself. You make your list of people that you think would actually accept that invitation.
Well, I know Joe and Paul would absolutely. RJ, that's super disappointing that you wouldn't
it's
go on the
surprising.
Banana boat with me. I feel like Lance would go on the banana boat
There's
with
no
me.
Chance.
Lance, there is a chance for Lance.
No chance. No chance.
100% chance for Lance.
He's a grown man with eight kids or however many he has. He's not getting on a banana boat
Jeremy would pretend like he doesn't want to go on the banana boat with me, but I think at the end of the day he would go on the banana boat with me.
There is
and a- I don't know the guys from the wheelhouse like that. Jake, probably not. I don't want to rub anybody the wrong way right now. Brad, BK, I think I'd invite him on the banana boat.
I think you're most likely foursome. That failure of a foursome who accepts that invitation.
I think that's great.
It's you.
Yeah.
Paul.
Yeah, for sure. Paul would 100% go on the banana.
Brad.
Boat. Yeah.
No, I removed Brad.
What?
Joe and Sean Mapes. Those are the.
Sean would absolutely
those
go.
Are your most likely four.
That's what a great banana boat crew. I really wanted you guys to be a part of it.
No chance.
I'm super sad that y'all are not team players the way I would
I've
hope you
I've never
would
said
be.
I was. No chance I am.
But I. That's a good banana boat crew. And
I will go on vacation with you guys, but not on the banana boat.
Not even a vacation.
He's a banana boat viewer. You won't even go and hang out with us, Del?
Not a chance.
Okay. I forgot. DDLT.
Del doesn't like stuff.
No, I'm doing DDLT because it sounds like both a sandwich and a wrestling move, so it's Del doesn't like things.
You should have said DDL me. Del doesn't like me. Del doesn't DDLM. Del doesn't like
that
me.
That is the most hurtful thing you've said over the last 2 days.
It's more appropriate. After your banana boat talk, just not a chance in hell. Wow. The fact that you already have a list of in mind and I was on it is a real fail on your part. We were going to get to the Shannon Sharp discussion between him and Kwame Brown about LeBron because I just wanted Dwight to lead into more LeBron talk, at least people talking about LeBron, but then it devolved into Josh's failure of a foursome as far as the banana boat crew. I would say we were talking about the difference between Patrick Beverley and Chris Paul. A radio, particularly this radio company's foursome compared to LeBron, Wade, Melo, and
spot on.
And who was the other one? Chris Paul?
Chris Paul, yeah.
I wasn't thinking about talent. Well, that too. But the financial differences between the four and your four.
Ours would be on a credit card. It'd be more credit card debt. And
you guys
not
are asking for a loan.
A banana loan.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into the back and forth between Kwame Brown and Shannon Sharpe, because Shannon Sharpe loves to insert himself into things, and Kwame Brown does as well. So we'll talk about that on the other side, and we'll get to, I think Julian was on hold. If he's still there, we'll get to him as well. A lot to talk about, but not banana boat stuff, because me and RJ are out of that. Josh could do that with whoever. It just won't be us two. We'll be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
Let's get back to the audition with Del Olale and the guy who's still auditioning, Josh Beard. Will he get the part? Only Dell knows that answer. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Dell and auditioner Josh Beard.
Josh and I were talking about potential movies to go see. Josh has a busy weekend. Mine less so.
Yeah.
Which is always the
case. You think my brother would be mad if I went and saw a movie during his wedding?
During the actual ceremony?
Like right before or what? Right after.
What's like he needs to have all your time? You can't watch a movie right after the ceremony?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I know there's like, oh, reception, speeches, all that stuff, but I haven't had a chance to go see Guardians 3 yet. I'd really like to take the opportunity.
I mean, I
to
wouldn't
do
advise
that.
Doing it during your toast, just to dip out when you have a toast to make since you're in the wedding. But
here's the weird thing. I actually haven't been asked to give a toast or a speech. Is that a weird? I'm his brother.
Well, it depends.
And I'm a groom.
So are you the only brother?
Is someone, yes.
Okay. So you're not the best man.
No, his best friend is the best man. A little salty about that, but my brother wasn't even at my wedding because my mom wouldn't fly out to California, so understandable.
Okay.
But I am a groomsman, and I haven't been asked to give a speech. And
are
I'm
you
a little...
good at it?
Yes, I'm phenomenal. Oh, dude, I take my experience from the radio. I take my heart that I have very, maybe way too often, laid out on the table here in front of you.
Far too much.
Far too much. And I take some different rhetorical devices to really engage the crowd, get them bring them in, make people cry. I'm phenomenal at speeches, especially on the fly.
Because there's no evidence to the contrary, I'm still going to say we need the audience to decide.
Okay.
You can't be the person telling us that you're great.
I'm so good at it.
There needs to be evidence of people listening to you saying, okay, yes, Josh is great at it. But your brother doesn't think so, since he's not allowing you the opportunity.
I don't know if it's him or if it's the wedding planner. Doesn't want anybody other than the best man, the maid of honor, and the parents to give speeches.
So you're not going to get up at some point and go bang your knife against the champagne glass just impromptu? You
depends
won't do that?
I don't know. I'm a scaredy cat in front of live crowds. If doing something like that out of... If it's within an order and a schedule, totally fine with it. But just randomly like that, I don't know. It depends on how drunk I get. If I have enough whiskey sours, I will absolutely do that. But then I'm actually terrified of what the content of the speech would be.
Well, it'll be about the love of your brother.
Well, maybe.
Well, I guess it depends on how much you've been drinking.
I could. If I drink enough whiskey sours, it might just be me sad that you and RJ won't go on a banana boat with me, which probably wouldn't make for the best wedding toast for my brother and his beautiful bride.
I don't know if I want that thought of me in your head. Like,
if I don't think
I want it.
I'm going to start the toast at my brother's wedding with, I was hanging out with Del.
No, I don't.
Couple of days.
I don't mind that. Oh. If you mention me at a wedding, it'll be weird for everyone.
There's no context.
But I don't care about that. I don't want you to have thoughts of why wouldn't he be on a banana boat with me. I don't need that in your head.
Well, there's nothing you can do about that. That's just there. We don't need to get into the banana boat discussion again.
I don't want to be rolling around your head for any reason, honestly.
Well, too late. We worked together one time, and I've been thinking about you nonstop.
That's aggressive.
That's far, everybody. Far everybody I meet, I think about them nonstop.
That explains some things about you, I think. But Julian wants to talk about Dwight Howard. Then we'll get into some Kwame Brown sound. He and Shannon Sharpe went and had a back and forth. What's up, Julian?
Good morning, gentlemen. Dale, first of all, I want to say one thing. I'd like to say your name. Like, remember Zena? Dale?
Yes. I remember the call.
So then, Dwight Howard. I remember when he played Yao Ming, they came down here. He was still in Orlando, and he was still more or less physical. And, dude, I was six rows away underneath the basket. And when these guys were banging, it was something to see. And when he got away from that, I just think that it took away from the game in general, because it was really, really cool. I mean, it was like I didn't understand how physical the NBA was until I saw that. And obviously the NBA is not anywhere near as physical now. But you're right. I think if he would have been that hammer, he would have been great. And he was still great, just so to speak, but he didn't meet his potential, I should say. Have a good day, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Julian. Yeah, when you're the first overall pick, you don't think to yourself, can I be a really good version of Ben Wallace? It just wasn't his thought process. And he could have been a valuable contributor for years, even after some of the skill left, if he thought to himself, you know what, there's a place for me because I'm going to be the strongest dude in the paint for the next 5 years, even as my skills erode, and I can still be a guy people depend on. It's just not something he wanted to be. And like I said, I get it.
Yeah.
You're the number one overall pick. You lead a team to the NBA Finals. You're the best player on a conference champion and an NBA finalist. I get not wanting to be something where you're just a lob threat and a guy who gets rebounds and blocks some shots. You want to be a guy the ball goes through. But if you watch those teams, he wasn't Hakeem throwing it out to guys because he was getting double teamed. It was a pick and roll. It was him running to a rim runner, and 3-point shooting was what got those Magic teams got that Magic team to the finals.
Well, and it was lazy, half-hearted kind of hooks, like short-armed hooks to the basket. Like his form on any of those post moves were awful. So it was everybody around him, and he was still the catalyst for a lot of the wins that they had.
He was
right?
The fulcrum. Everything was built around him, but yeah. He just wasn't a guy who you could just throw the ball into him four or five times in a big spot, and he was going to get you a bucket. It's just not how he was kind of built.
His trajectory reminds me of what it could have been. Could have been like Dirk was very specifically good at only a few things, and they had to build a team around him that was like Tyson Chandler had to be a defensive player of the year type of player. Jason Kidd had to completely remold who he was as a player, A, because of age, but B, because of fit on the team. Sean Marion, an older Sean Marion, had to step it up on defense. Dirk was really good at a couple of different things. He was good at shooting, he was good at high post, and he was good at the fadeaway. Rebounding was rough. Defense was rough. He was very niche in what he was great at, but he was very great at that. And Dwight Howard could have had the same trajectory or a similar trajectory, just in the exact opposite way. He's not going to be a good shooter. He's not going to be a good high post guy. But man, he's going to play lights out defense. He's going to affect the game in so many different ways that he can be unstoppable in those ways. And if the right team were built around him, then he could be the linchpin or the fulcrum that would lead that. But I get it. I get wanting to be that guy. At a much lower level, I've always wanted to be like the Steve Nash type of basketball player. When I go play pickup, that's what I want to be. But everybody ends up calling me Kevin Love, which is super hurtful because I just shoot and I can get some rebounds, but I don't move well. And that's actually devolved the last couple of years to where I've had people call me Glenn Davis. And so I've gone from wanting to be Steve Nash to being called Kevin Love to now I'm just being called Glenn Big Baby Davis because I just make faces and get a rebound every once in a while.
Aren't there like episodes of King of Queens where Kevin James plays basketball?
Yeah, it's very similar.
Do you have that game?
I'm good at basketball, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm Kevin James playing basketball.
Yeah. We're slandering Dwight Howard, but we should mention he's first team all defense in the Taiwanese League this year.
That's pretty incredible.
All defensive first team, rebound leader, all-star game. This is funny. He was the all-star game MVP and the All-Star Game Most Famous Player.
Wow. So
I guess that's them. They have so many washed up or older American-born players, and they go over there, and then he was the most famous player in the game.
That's good.
I got to figure out how he won that, because I got to look into that.
Yeah. What's the voting look like for that?
Yeah. Who was Dwight competing against? We were going to play the Kwame Brown thing. We'll play that on the other side. But I did want to play this because Julian talked about it in his call about the physicality that Dwight Howard showed. Well, Adam Silver recently talked about how physical the game was and why it was too physical.
There was a point, I believe, you know, probably in around the late 90s when the game became too physical.
Mm.
And I think we lost some of
for our viewers, you mean?
Yeah, and I think for our fans, from the aesthetic enjoyment of the game, where it de-emphasized the particular skill a player had and maybe weighted too heavily physicality, where a big, strong player could come in and prevent an incredibly skilled player from doing those kinds of things. Mm.
I think of, not that he's a small guy, but a smaller player like Steph Curry can do on the floor. I think that when you think of some of his ability to shoot, his ability to move through the paint,
that is that Kevin Garnett?
If guys could just bang him and knock him to the ground, as that was once the case in the league, I don't think that would be a better brand of basketball. I also think we have to find the right balance, because I know when I sit in the stands or talk to friends sometime, they want to bring back, and we've tried to bring back a little bit more of the physicality. Like, I think people like to see hard defense. I mean, it goes a little bit before to what you and I are talking about, like touch and feel. Like, I don't think either people like that idea that guys can go through unscathed and, like, you're protecting your star players.
I need a mashup of the soundbite from the Pat Bev podcast earlier with the Kevin Garnett moans. I'm just going to do that. Can I do that throughout the show whenever you're making great points?
I mean, it's a little aggressive because Kevin at least kept it. I mean, it was we could tell, and it was startling, but at least it was somewhat understated. What you're doing is like, okay, that's more in the Kevin Garnett realm.
I got to work on it.
Yeah, you can have another listen to it during the break, and we'll see if you come up with, hey, sit silent and let the man speak. The moaning is aggressive from Kevin Garnett. But it's funny that he mentioned, and I can't believe we still have to talk about the 90s in basketball. It's something that always gets reverted back to because of the physicality of the moment. Apparently, that'll never go away. We are now 30 years removed from the 90s when it comes to basketball. Yeah. We're still discussing the physicality when the game has progressed, or in some people's eyes, regressed 30 years, depending on where you sit. We will get to what Kwame Brown said about Shannon Sharpe, maybe, and what Shannon Sharpe said about Kwame Brown. A lot of people saying a lot of things who don't even play basketball anymore. So we'll discuss that and a lot more. Maybe Josh will moan throughout. We'll see. We'll come right back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. The audition continues on ESPN 97.5. Listen as these guys suck up to Dell for a chance at stardom. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Dell and today's suck up, Josh Beard.
We were discussing who's the biggest celebrity who defends LeBron as far as the passion in the way they defend him and, well, how famous they are.
Yeah.
And I can't think of anyone who fits both those better than Shannon Sharpe. So we all remember really kind of what started the downfall of the Grizzlies is his back and forth with that team in a game in L.A. where Shannon and his, let's say colorful attire was getting after Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, Desmond Bane, and I think T. Morant was involved as well, and Steven Adams just came over saying, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Really? We gotta worry about that. More of a giant peacekeeper than anything else with an intimidating glare. But the defense of LeBron has continued for Shannon Sharpe. That all started because Dylan Brooks, right, Dylan Brooks was getting after LeBron, and Shannon was pretty much saying, you are not the person who can talk to him that way.
Yeah.
Just sit there and watch the game. That's, in my eyes, I get you're a fan, but I would just enjoy the back and forth. I don't know how I wouldn't even think to insert myself.
Imagine how Shannon Sharpe would react if an NBA player stepped on a football field and was like, don't talk to Tom Brady that way, or don't talk to Ray Lewis.
Shannon
that
Sharpe,
way.
A known talker,
yeah,
on the field. I don't know, like if he was yelling at Eddie George from across the sideline, and someone I don't know who it would be at the time,
Allen Iverson,
said, "Hey, what are you doing?" Yeah, it's weird. It's weird to be a pro player and take offense at trash talk. It just speaks to his love of LeBron James, but Shannon Sharpe will continue to defend LeBron, and like that is his right. And Kwame Brown said something that really upset Shannon Sharpe. Kwame Brown pretty much took shots at LeBron for not getting up a shot on that final play when the Nuggets played really good defense, stopped LeBron, and they went on to win that series. And Kwame said something like Richard Hamilton would have got up a shot. He mentioned another player who would have got up a shot, and this is Shannon Sharpe's response to that.
You talking about what Kobe would have done? What would you have done? You're the number one overall pick.
Yep.
I don't get it because LeBron was in a no-win situation. People say, LeBron, why would you settle for a three? Why would you shoot a step back this? He drives the ball. Jamal Murray does a great job of tying him up. And that even as he holds onto the ball, he's trying to get the shot up. Aaron Gordon blocks it. Now you're saying, well, he should have pulled up. It's easy to say what you should have done after the fact of knowing what has happened.
Yep.
And Skip, he said, you're supposed to be great? Really, Kwame, of all the people, he should never, ever question anybody's greatness. Because this is what we know. If there's a Mount Rushmore for bust in the NBA history, whether he's the first head, the second head, the third, or the fourth, he's on Mount Rushmore of bust NBA players. There's no question. And then he's going to question the guy.
You know, a lack of self-awareness popped out at me because isn't their entire show built on and telling players what they should have done?
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah, football player telling NBA players what they should and shouldn't do.
That is what their show is built on, other than talking about who's clutch or whatever they get into. I don't really listen. But this entire industry is built on you telling someone what they should have done after it's over.
Yelling at somebody about what they should have done.
Exactly. So I found that a blatant lack of self-awareness.
The first thing that I think of is I would love to see Shannon Sharpe's reaction if we kind of twist the scenario a little bit. Let's say we take somebody like Mark Sanchez. And Mark Sanchez, he does a lot of stuff. He talks about football a lot now. What if Mark Sanchez said, you know what, Patrick Mahomes is really good, but I can't believe he didn't throw a touchdown at the end of that game. And an NBA player came and said, you know what, Mark Sanchez, you have no room to talk about Patrick Mahomes like that. Patrick Mahomes has won Super Bowls. How dare you? I would love to see what Shannon Sharpe thought about an NBA player inserting his opinion on somebody, on an NFL, a former NFL player's opinion on another NFL player.
I don't think he'd have an opinion. I think this is LeBron-based.
This is 100%
LeBron. And Kwame Brown said something about his favorite player. And he's responding like someone who was 15 will respond if someone says something about their favorite player.
Kwame may be one of the biggest busts the NBA has ever seen, but he was still an NBA player. He still played basketball at one of the highest levels. He still knows the game, and he played alongside a lot of those guys. So do I love Kwame Brown's criticism of what LeBron should or shouldn't have done? No. But I'm also not going to sit there and say, Kwame, you have no room to talk. Dude, like he's a part of the 1% that made it to that level. No matter how it ended up for him at that level, he still made it to that level. And he still deserves some modicum of respect whenever he's talking about how the game is played, especially when he was essentially a courtside fan watching all of these guys get up those shots. Because what he said wasn't wrong. Like Rick Hamilton would have gotten that shot up. Kobe would have gotten that shot up. And I'm not going to sit here and break down whether or not LeBron is great or not great because he didn't get that shot. I think it speaks more to the way Denver was playing defense in that moment than anything. But I think it's hilarious for Shannon to get so defensive that he would completely discredit a guy who made it to the NBA for analyzing how another NBA player
was
playing.
He's been sitting across from a guy for years who tells LeBron what he should have done.
You'd think he'd be used to it.
Who's made an entire career, went from journalist to TV performer by telling LeBron what he should have done after he didn't do it. This is a Kwame Brown responding to Shannon Sharpe.
You a guest in the house of this basketball talk. Didn't you know that? And now, since you don't want to act like a guest in this and you want to invalidate me, you football playing dummy. It ain't no first downs in basketball, clown. How you gonna try to invalidate a man who was the number one draft pick, boy? You wanna try to put some bass in your voice when you talking to me? When you on a panel with a n- that buckled you down, boy? You on a panel with a white boy that blamed his coach for not making it to college, and you wanna try to invalidate me? Are you a clown or what? I'm so glad that you just exposed yourself, you clown. You think you're going to put some bass in your voice when you talking to me? And that white boy made you say, I'm just trying to let me finish. You a guest in this house of basketball. Ain't no first downs in motherfucking basketball. You big, tall, thick-tongued punk motherfucker. Did you not know that? So I don't know what make you think that your opinion on basketball is more than mine because you a fanboy for LeBron. You call me emotional, and you was finna fight a whole damn Memphis Grizzly team because of your love affair, LeBron?
You the reason why John Morant probably carrying guns right now. John Morant would say, oh, a big ass in a sweater, a grandmama sweater, trying to fight his daddy and the whole damn team.
Kwame Brown, better personality than basketball player by a wide margin, and relatively speaking, still a great basketball player. I don't know if that's marketable anywhere, like on a big stage, but someone's got to give him
that plays on social media.
Someone's got to give him something because
that was savage. Yeah. Parts of that where it's like, oh my God, I can't believe he'd go that far.
And so Art tweeted and said, too bad you had we have to mute what Kwame says or beep what Kwame says because what he says is he's really funny. Kwame's got a spot someplace. I don't know where it is because
– get him a podcast.
Because there are some places where people aren't going to accept that as far as, you know, sponsorships or whatever. But I don't – someone's got to pay him a bag to do things like that.
Barstool should immediately reach out and be like, okay, Kwame, we're going to give you a podcast. And also we're going to invite you and Shannon Sharp to box in that, like, boxing thing that they have that they do.
Yeah, I know Shannon's a big dude, but Kwame's six,
he is huge.
11 or 6'11".
I mean, he has a podcast. I mean, it kind of died down after the whole, you know, Stephen A. calling him a bus, and then he just went just nuclear on Twitter and YouTube and was, you know, I'm my mama's son, and, you know, why were you talking trash about me since I was in high school? Then it died down, and you didn't hear anything from Kwame. Now it's this resurgence of Kwame Brown again, who has a YouTube channel now, and, like, he does a podcast where he just talks trash, and
he's got a new fan. I want to watch more Kwame. I never thought I'd say that ever in my life. I want to see more Kwame Brown.
I don't know if he burns too bright and you can only get him in certain situations where he's riled up, but that look, Pat McAfee, whatever, give me Kwame.
Yeah, better clapback, Kwame Brown or John Granato?
Well, Kwame can say things that John can't say, and that's amazing that there are some things actually that John can't get away with. I'll take Kwame. Kwame's apparently on Outkick. I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
So there is a platform for him. But, hey, I hope that bag is big because if Kwame's bringing that all the time, I'm a fan.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, shout out to Kwame Brown.
Never thought I'd hear that either.
Number one overall pick as far as personalities are concerned. Yeah, absolutely. In my draft, I'm taking him over Shannon. Every day, all day. That wraps up the second hour of the audition. On the final day of the audition, Josh and I will continue along with RJ. We've got some things to discuss. We talked some college football yesterday. Well, there are rankings as far as coaches are concerned, and I think Josh will be surprised where his coach lands. I'm not surprised by mine. I just think he should be way lower. But he had done some things before he got to Miami that keep him at a certain respectable level. So we'll get into plenty of other things in the final hour. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.